week I spent several minutes talking with Neil deGrasse Tyson. And in our conversation with America's favorite astrophysicist, we got into some space stuff. And so today's conversation is going to be a very interesting follow-up to that. My guest is Jim Al-Khalili, who is a quantum physicist and author and BBC broadcaster, who's based at the University of Surrey in England, and the author of a brand new book out this week called Aliens, the World's Leading Scientists on the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. Hi, Jim. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. I know it's Friday evening in Surrey.
No problem.
Thank you for giving up part of your weekend here. Can we say definitively that there is no other life in our solar system other than here on Earth?
No. No, we can't. Not yet. We can say definitively there's no intelligent life out there, sort of complex organisms, little green men. But in terms of life at all, it may well be that there's some form of simple microbial life under the ice of one of the moons of Saturn or Jupiter, and we're still looking.
You know, I have a conversation with a friend of mine all the time about this notion of finding life elsewhere in the universe, and you just described one of the things that I say all the time, which is, why do we think that all aliens are going to look like us?
Yeah, I mean, I think partly that we have Hollywood to blame for that. And partly it's human nature that we create alien life in our image. But there's absolutely no reason whatsoever that, they'll have a head, two arms, two legs. And in fact, this is why that film Arrival that came out last year was so good and so well sort of respected by scientists, because the aliens depicted there are nothing like anything we might imagine looking like us.
Yeah, we could have figured that out if we had just looked at a zoo.
Yeah, okay. That's true. There's enough alien-looking life here on Earth. You don't have to look elsewhere.
Have you never seen a squid?
Exactly.
Not even that. A tree. They don't look like people. Those, the flowers in your backyard, that's life. That qualifies, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think because we think that there should be, or we are fascinated by the notion that there's intelligent life. And if it's intelligent life, then we assume it has to be like us, that they have to have big brains and a head and so on. But even that's not necessarily the case.
All right, so let's talk about this notion of intelligent life. Are we intelligent enough to know if there's intelligent life, and would we recognize it if it came and knocked on our door?
We're not sure. We're starting to get a good handle on what we think are the boxes you need to tick to say definitively, yes, there's life on some distant planet. So we have to learn about what life is on Earth and how life on Earth started. So we can guess that it probably would be carbon-based. It probably will need water. It certainly needs some energy source. It has to be able to store information. Doesn't have to have DNA. Doesn't have to be made of cells like us. But, I think we are not sure yet the range of possible life forms that could exist out there. Our imagination hasn't stretched that far yet.
Okay, and either has our space travel, which we're going to get to in a second, but just our observations of the skies from here, and also from things like the Cassini spacecraft and Saturn, or Voyager, which has left the solar system, or the Hubble Space Telescope. Do we have the technology to see the places that there might be life and then say, uh-oh, well, we looked there, ain't there?
We are beginning to, yes. I think 10 years ago, I'd have said no. We're just pointing our telescopes out of the sky, but we won't know that there's life out there unless we get some sort of radio signal from the aliens announcing their presence. But the technology in astronomy has developed so much in the last decade that, yes, I think we can answer that. So, as you say, we're sending probes to... we've got missions to Mars, we've got the probes to the moons of Saturn and Jupiter that can actually look for microbial life directly under the ice or under the surface of Mars. But we're also looking further afield, and we can now tell, just by studying the light coming from distant systems, stars that have extrasolar planets going around them, whether there's the signature for life. So we won't see life directly. I don't think I think we're sort of far away from that. But we might be able to see the chemical elements, if a planet has an atmosphere, that would indicate the presence of life. That wouldn't be there if there wasn't life making them. So So we're sort of on the cusp of being able to make those sorts of discoveries.
But we might be waiting for a radio signal from them. And in the meantime, we're sending out things like this show, which shows no sign of intelligence.
Yes, it might be putting aliens off from visiting us. You know?
Yeah. Well, I said to Neil last week, I said, you know, I started doing this in the 70s, and that means I've been in space for over four decades. And then we just heard recently that we discovered another planet that's 47 light years away, which means that my voice is getting there about now.
Maybe on the basis of this program, they're making decisions about whether to invade Earth.
Oh. Well, you know what? Now you bring up an interesting thing, the concept of invading Earth.
Yeah.
Should we really be worried about if there are intelligent aliens somewhere else in the universe, even in our own galaxy, even in our own solar system, that they would come to invade us?
I think we have to use the laws of probability here. Firstly, yes, we think that, you know, there's no reason to think that life on Earth is special in the universe. Life began on Earth pretty quickly after the Earth cooled down sufficiently for life to develop. So we think then life proliferates, you know, elsewhere in the universe. But chances are it's very simple, single-cellular life. The idea of there's intelligent life out there is likely, laws of probability would suggest, much rarer and certainly close enough to visit us. But the other point, and this is a feature that we discuss in the book, what would be the reason for aliens, intelligent civilizations visiting us? They wouldn't want to mate with us because, you know, you can't even have mating between different species here on Earth, let alone an alien life form that probably isn't even based on DNA. Would they want our resources? Well, there are plenty of other places probably where they have richer resources than Earth. There's nothing special about Earth that I think aliens would want. We flatter ourselves, I think, in thinking that we are so amazing and special that aliens would want to visit us. Yes, we are amazing and special to us, but if an alien civilization is so advanced that they can send spaceships through interstellar space, there's probably other places they'll want to visit. And space is big.
Yeah, and because they can't travel faster than the speed of light, they would have had to take decades, if not centuries, to get here, right?
Yes. I mean, according to Einstein, the speed of light is the fastest speed possible in the universe, and if that weren't true, we'd have to revise, you know, several hundred years' worth of physics if we found that was wrong. But, of course, there are those who would argue that the speed of light is only constraining within normal space-time, and who knows, we might develop the science and the technology which would allow us to warp space and time, you know, a la Star Trek, that would allow travel, interstellar travel. You know, after all, you know, Hollywood's ahead of the game here. You know, you watch movies like Contact or Interstellar where you know, the technology has been developed enough to build wormholes, shortcuts through space-time, then, you know, it may be possible. So just as it's hard for us to imagine what alien life might look like, it's hard for us to conceive of what a really advanced scientific technology is capable of. So we can't rule that out yet.
Would we have to say, though, that if they were able to travel, even at whatever speed they could, less than the speed of light, or if they could bend it with a wormhole or whatever, whoever they are, if they could do that, since we can't do that yet, we would have to acknowledge something in the universe evolved faster and further than humans?
Yes. Not necessarily faster, of course, because they may well have evolved billions of years before life started on Earth.
Right.
You know, the Earth and the solar system is a sort of at least a second generation system. You know, we were formed from the debris, the remnants of a supernova, a star that exploded. We know that because of the different atoms and elements we have here. So there might be other star systems where life could have evolved billions of years ago. So they've had, you know, one heck of a head start over us.
Yes, they have.
And if they're older aliens, they'll have their spaceships driving in the fast lane doing 40 miles per hour.
With the blinker
on. Yes, yes, that'll take them forever to get here.
Now back to the notion of human space travel. What do you think that's going to look like, not just in the next 10 or 15 years, but let's say 100, 200 years from now? What's the future of human space travel?
I think it's inevitable, just the very nature of humankind, that we want to explore, and we're curious and want to find out. At the moment, you know, we talk about the financial cost of even sending a manned mission to Mars.
Yep.
But I think it's inevitable. You know, if you're talking 100, 200 years from now, we're going to start inevitably colonizing, not to go and live because there are other planets better than Earth. I think if we've put our own planet in order, it's still going to be the best place for us to live for the foreseeable future. But we're certainly going to be wanting to extract resources, minerals from the moons and planets of the solar system. That'll happen in the next century. Thereafter, there's absolutely no reason why we can't imagine technologically building spacecraft, starships who want to explore further afield, getting out to, certainly to those near stars. Whether we're going to have to put the passengers into hibernation for long journeys, whether we develop the technology to find shortcuts through space-time, then that's pure speculation. For me, as a physicist, if it doesn't break the laws of physics, then anything's possible. And we've learned that over history. Imagine 100 years ago telling people about the technology of today and the internet and so on. They'd have seen it as magic.
Yeah.
So we should also not hold back and be modest about what we may achieve in the distant future.
But I bet that some of the scientists that you talked to in this book, for this book, said, we're not going to go anywhere. We're going to build robots and they'll go for us.
Yes, absolutely. This is one of the, Martin Rees, Lord Martin Rees, who's the Astronomer Royal here in Britain, one of the leading scientists and cosmologists in the world, in fact. He talks about how humanity may go ahead and explore the solar system. And certainly, at the same time as us developing space travel or developing looking out into space, we're developing artificial intelligence and robots. And 100 years from now, intelligent robots may be the way to explore space. Why would we want to risk our lives, our biological squidgy, matter, and risk killing ourselves with the radiation of space? Sending robots out into space sounds very, very reasonable. And in which case, it may well be the case that if there are intelligent alien life forms out there, they may be sending their robots to visit us, not coming in person.
I didn't think of that. If they're smarter than us, how come they're not sending robots?
Yeah, exactly. It's more likely that they would than come themselves, for the very same reason.
Well, in that case, Jim, on behalf of everybody on the show, I would like just to say welcome to our robot overlords. And because that message is going to go out into space, eventually it'll get there with that Chuck Berry record.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. And I shouldn't have laughed there, because you should take this seriously. They want to know who that scientist was who was laughing at that.
Yeah, they're going to come down and recognize we welcome them. You laughed at them. Kill Jim.
I'll take the hit.
You've mentioned several movies that had space as part of them. What are some of the movies that have gotten space so completely wrong you found them laughable?
The top of the list I'd say Prometheus.
What was that?
So that was the film that was meant to be the precursor to Ridley Scott's Alien.
Okay.
And the science was so appallingly bad. I'm not one of those scientists who will watch a sci-fi movie and then sit there and pick holes in it. Last week I went and watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 and loved it. You suspend your disbelief and you enjoy these things.
Right.
Sometimes a sci-fi movie is meant to be taken seriously and is visually stunning and actually tries to get the science right. Interstellar was one example. The film Gravity is another example.
Mm-hmm.
And so you hold them to a higher standard. But some films are so awful that there's really no excuse. And unfortunately, I think Prometheus is one of them.
It's funny you mentioned an Alien prequel. We're about to get another one of those called Alien Covenant, which is timed, by the way, to be released at the same time as your book. Nice going with that.
Whoa.
Oh, well, there you go. It's almost as though I'd planned it that way.
One other question I wonder if you talked to any of your scientist friends about when you were writing this book. Do any of them raise the notion that our whole life is more like The Sims? In other words, there is some intelligent species that's running our lives like a simulation game online?
We don't talk about it in the book, and I don't think the contributors to the book, and these are astronomers, they're cosmologists, they're chemists, physicists, psychologists even, none of them actually raise that point. But I know that there are people like Elon Musk, There's another American cosmologist, Max Tegmark, who talk about this. They even suggest that it's overwhelmingly likely that we are, in fact, living in a simulation.
Likely? Wait a minute. Likely?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. More likely than not.
Wow.
The basic idea is that, you know, if there's enough life form, intelligent life forms out there, then they, you know, and been around for long enough, they'll have had the chance to develop the technology sufficiently to create simulations. And there should be millions, billions of simulations out there. So it's more likely that there is a simulation than there is real life form. So it's more likely that we think, you know, we are real. But in fact, you know, like in the film The Matrix, we are just a simulation. We're just software.
Yeah, but you know, the Sims are not around anymore. We had them for a few years. People were really, really into them. And then that and the whole Farm Life game, they all just kind of went away and we were done with those. That going to happen to humanity? We're just going to get tossed aside?
I have to say, I don't come down on that side of the argument. I think that's philosophy, that's metaphysics. For me, the universe is real. We're real.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, there may not be other life out there, but yeah, for the time being, I'm quite happy living my real life. Yeah,
I hope that Sims thing isn't real because I haven't gotten past level 2 in my life.
Oh, crap. That has nothing to do with the game. That's actually your life, Dan.
Oh, okay, well.
Last thing I'm curious about here, Jim.
Yeah.
Are there as many science deniers in the UK as there are here? And is it having effect on public policy there as it is here?
Not as much. I mean, I think we've had a wake-up call with our Brexit vote. Which is a similar sort of populist reaction to establishment to the election of Donald Trump in America, but you know there are conspiracy theorists, there are science deniers, you know, those who deny that we went to the moon or climate change is real or so on, or even those who say the Earth is flat. But, I mean, I hate to say this, but there seems to be more in America. And I don't know why, because America still leads the world at the cutting edge of science. And yet it seems to also have this record of having a lot of people who deny science. And it is a worry. And I think, you know, it's something that we have to counter. You know, all this issue with fake news and what's real and what isn't and who to believe and who not to believe. You know, scientists have a job to cut through that and say, come on, look, there's logic, there's rationalism, and evidence. You know, the thing about science is that, you know, you need evidence. You can't just come up with any old idea and say, my opinion is more important than your firm evidence.
And the great thing about the scientific method is if it discovers new evidence that contradicts the old evidence, we go with that new evidence as opposed to saying, no, I was right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't be so wedded to a theory, if evidence comes along that says you're wrong, you then have to change your mind. That's the point of science.
Absolutely.
And we do have the biggest amount of nuts in the entire world in this country. So.
Well, you see, I didn't want to be rude.
No, that's okay. I'll be rude.
We've also got some very intelligent people.
I'll throw it out there for you.
Yeah. The book is called Aliens, the World's Leading Scientists on the Search for Extraterrestrial Life. It's a terrific read. And, Jim, I appreciate you coming on and joining us here today. Live from Surrey, England, is Jim Al-Khalili. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.